Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Tzadi Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will commence from the Mishnah that's found at the very bottom of Tzadi Vov Amud Beis. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Im Bishel Boi Mitchilas Horegel, Yevashel Boi Kol Horegel. If you have a pot that was used for cooking up sacrifices at the beginning of a holiday, the holiday period that we're talking about is a 7-day holiday period. You are able to continue using the pot throughout the holiday period without mrika ushtifa. Mrika and shtifa was the process of cleansing pots in which sacrificial meat was cooked. You can use these pots for cooking throughout the holiday, and at the end of the holiday, you will then do a mrika shtifa. The Chachamim disagree, and they say ad zman achila. This expression will be dealt with in the Gemara. Mrika ushtifa. Mrika equals kemerika sakois. It's a rinsing out of the vessel from within. Ushtifa keshtifa sakois. Shtifa is a reference to the cleansing of it from its outside. Mrika ushtifa betzoinein. Mrika and shtifa are done with cold water. Hashpud va'askilo mag'ilon v'chamin. These types of utensils that were used for roasting of meat, they are subjected to hag'olo b'chamin. The Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah asks, these things are really supposed to be subjected to burning, being put into a fire for their cleansing or expunging of that which was absorbed into them. My time under Rabbi Tarfon. What's the basis of Rabbi Tarfon's halacha that stated if one uses vessels at the beginning of a holiday period, even though the holiday period is maybe a 7-day period, you can continue using the vessels without doing mrika and shtifa until the end of the holiday? Omer Yitzchak, di Omer Kro, ufanisa baboiker v'halachta loholecha. That posuk is saying that after you've come to the Beis Hamikdash, you will then go, but after you stayed over a day, after you stayed over, you then go home to your house. Hakosuv asa'oi lekulon boiker echad. The pasuk views the entire holiday period as one day. Therefore, if you started cooking at the beginning of the holiday, your use of the pot throughout the entire holiday is considered as if you're using it all told for one day. Well, the Gemara asks, if you're going to view the holiday as a one-day period, then what is going to be with regard, how do we view things with regard to other halachas? Maskifla Rav Achdevuye Bar Ami. Rav Achdevuye asks, v'chi ein pigul baregel, v'ein noisar baregel. Let us say someone shechts a korban, he slaughters a sacrifice with the intention of eating the meat 2 days from now. And under standard circumstances, if you have that take place during the middle of the week, that is an example of pigul, and that renders the korban posel, and the penalty for eating the meat would be a kores. But if you're saying the entire holiday is viewed as one day, so that even if I intend to, if I sacrifice or I slaughter some sacrificial meat at the beginning of the holiday period with the intention of eating it 4 or 5 days from now, it's still all considered within the same day. And are you really going to say that? And nosar, nosar is the situation where meat is left over beyond its acceptable period. The acceptable period, let us say, for Korban Shlomim would be 2 days. So if I leave meat over till the third day, that becomes nosar, which also carries with it a severe penalty, the penalty of Kores. But if you're going to say that the whole holiday period is considered one day, so then there would be no nosar either if you left meat over from the beginning of the holiday till several days into the holiday. And if you say that's true, that the standard dinim of pigul and nosar don't apply during the holiday itself, well, if you say thusly, v'hatanya, we have a source that says otherwise. Rabbi Nosson Omer, lo amar Rabbi Tarfon, ela zu bilvad. Rabbi Tarfon that said the holiday period is considered one day, that's only with regard to mrika and shtifa. So if his whole concept of the holiday being viewed as one, even though it lasts several days, as being a unit of one day, and that applies only to Mrika and Shtifa, where does Rabbi Tarfon learn that from? Elo, kiddur of Nachman Amaravua, Yomar of Nachman Amaravua, Kol Yoim V'Yoim Nase Girul L'Chaviro. Mrika and Shtifa is a process designed to cleanse the vessel from its from the korban meat, the sacrificial meat that it was used for. But since every day the pot is in use, every day serves as the cooking of every subsequent day serves as the cleansing of the cooking of the previous day. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Naase giul lechavero mitoich shehashlomim mitzuyin beregel. Since the shlomim korban is common during the holiday period, ein bolua shelo naase noisar. The absorbed taste of the shlomim meat in the pot, in the pot walls, does not become nosar. It never becomes nosar during the holiday period. Sharei zman shlomim lishnei yomim. The acceptable time period for a shlomim is 2 days. V'chi mevashel be shlomim ho'idna, when you cook up a shlomim today, hoder mevashel be shlomim l'mochar, you'll be cooking up another shlomim the next day. U'bolea mishlomim shenishchatu b'yoyim ha'mocharos u'polei mashibola esmoil. U'bolea min ha'achronim. In the cooking process, what happens is the next day's cooking will, at the time that it's being absorbed into the pot, it pushes out, so to speak, yesterday's taste that had been absorbed in the pot walls. So the pot is always absorbing the most recent cooking, while at the same time expunging or purging the pot of its of the previous day's taste. Nimsa she'eno ba lidei nosar. This way, there is never, during the holiday period, there's never any time lapse on any given day's sacrificial cooking. V'imbo levashel chatos, and if he comes to, let us say, cook up a chatos, which has a 1 day time period, zohir levashel achrof shlomim bo bayom. That very same day, he will cook up a shlomim. The shlomim being the subsequent cooking, that purges the pot of the previous cooking of that very same day, the chatos cooking, and it absorbs the shlomim. Upoyas chatos bless the shlomim, and it purges it of the chatos and absorbs the shlomim, thereby once again creating an extension, so to speak, that since the shlomim was the most recently absorbed taste, it does not become nosar on the next day. And on that subsequent day, as we said, another shlomim will be cooked up. So this chain process takes place throughout the holiday, thereby alleviating the need for any special cleansing process. And hence, Rabbi Tarfon says, there's no need for the Mrika and Shtifa, which is part of the cleansing process, to take place during the holiday. V'chachomim omrim ad zman achila. This was their idea of when you do Mrika and Shtifa during the holiday. My Komar, what does this mean? Adzman Achila. Omar Rav Nachman Ravua, Mamtin Lo Kol Zman Achila. You wait for the eating, the permitted eating time to lapse. For Hoder Ovid Lo Mrika Shtifa. And then you do the Mrika and Shtifa. Menohani Mili. From where do we learn this? Omar Av Yochanan, Omar Abba Yosi ben Abba, Ksiv Umurak Vishutav. One pasuk says that. Uksiv Kol Zohar Bekonim Yochal. The first pasuk is Vayikrovov Pasukhov Aleph, and the second pasuk is Pasukhov Beis, psukim that are next to each other. Why are these psukim next to each other? Ha Ketzad. From what does this teach us? Mamtin lo ad zman achila. You, since the second pasuk mentioned yochal, we are to learn that you wait the entire eating time period that's allotted for the eating, and when that lapses, havahoder ovid lo mriko shtifa. At the end of that time period, you are supposed to do the mriko shtifa. Mriko ushtifa. Mrika k'mrika sakois, shtifa k'shtifa sakois. Tanu Rabbanan, mrika u'shtifa, you can see that we have a section in a frame in our marking system. That which is in a frame is a Tanaic source. And this serves to distinguish the Tanaic literature from the rest of the Gemara. We continue reading this source, mrika u'shtifa, b'tzonei, the very Rebbe. According to Rebbe, both of these expressions are a reference to the use of cold water in the cleansing of the pot. The Chachamim omrim, Mriko b'chamin, u'shtifa b'tzoinein. The Chachamim hold, the Chachamim who disagree with Rebbe say that Mriko is with hot water and shtifa is with the cold water. My time of the Rabbanan. Where did the Rabbanan get their idea that you're supposed to use hot water in the cleansing process? Midi dahave agi'ule oivdei k'chavim. Similar to the way we treat pots that were used by Gentiles for their unkosher food. In cleansing those cooking utensils, they are subjected to heat. That's learned from Psukim in Sefer Bamidbar. So just like the cleansing of unkosher vessels is through the use of heat, so too the cleansing or the cleansing of sacrificial vessels. Rabbi Omar Loch, Rabbi responds and says, Hag'ola lo ko'amina. I am not talking at all about the need for boiling out. In other words, it's obvious that you have to boil up the pot in order to purge it of what that which it absorbed. Ki ko'amina the mrika u'shtifa de basar hag'ola. I'm referring to the mrika and shtifa that takes place after the boiling up of the pot. Boiling for the purpose of purging it of that which it previously absorbed. So according to Rebbe, there certainly is the use of hot water in the cleansing process, but that's not what the Torah is referring to when it uses the terms, when it refers to mrika and shtifa. The Rabbanan who do hold that the boiling up is part of the is incorporated in the term Mrika. So the Rabbanan say, if Rebbe is correct that both are one quality of water, one temperature of water, Lichtoiv kro oi moirak moirak oi shutaf shutaf mai u moirak v'shutaf, if it's the same type of water, so if Mrika Shtifa is the same kind of water, so the same verb should have been used. Why does the Torah switch or change the verbs from morak to shutaf? It says umorak, and then it says v'shutaf. Shema mino, from this we learn, Mrika b'chamin v'shtifa b'tzonein. From this we learn that they represent two different temperature levels of water. Mrika is b'cham, with hot water, and shtifa is with cold water. V'rebi, what is his response? After all, he holds that both Mrika and Shtifa are with the same temperature water. So he says, Iksiv umorak morak, if the Torah would have said the same word twice, Havamina tre zimni morak, I would have thought that you do the same action twice, or tre zimni shutaf, or the same shutaf action twice. Lekach siv umorak v'shutaf, the Torah uses two different words, lomar lach, to convey to us that merika is kimrika sakos, it's a rinsing from within, and shtifa is kishtifa sakos, a washing from without, from the outside. True, both are with cold water, according to Rebbe. However, the actions are different, and hence the Torah changes the words. One is merika, that's a reference to rinsing it out from within, and shtifa is a reference to the washing its outside. The Mishnah. Bishel boi kochim v'chulin, oi kochim koche kochim v'kochim kalim. If a pot was used for both, for kochim, and then was used to cook up chulin, or it was used for cooking up high-level sanctity sacrifices, and then used for cooking up the lower-level sanctity sacrifices, let's focus on, well, if the second food has a taste of the first food in it, hare hakalim necholim kechamurin shebohen. If you, for example, had cooked up first high-level sanctity sacrifices, which have a, let us say, a one-day time period for eating, and place-wise they're restricted to the Azara, to the temple courtyard. And after you cook them up, you then cooked up Kochim Kalim, which have a two-day time period for their consumption, and they're not restricted to the Azara. They can be eaten in all of Yerushalayim. So if there is a perceived taste in the Kochim Kalim of the Kochei Kochim, you're then going to eat the kochim kalim with the restrictions, with the stringencies of the kochei kochim, which would mean that the kochim kalim that you have now, you would have to eat within one day and stay within the azora. V'einon te'unin mriko ushtifa. This will have to be explained by the Gemara. V'einon poislim b'maga. The Rashi says v'ein poslin b'mago im nifsalu hakalin v'noga bohen bosar ubola mehen ein nifsalin v'gemara meforish law. This too will have to be explained by the Gemara. Rokik shenoga b'rokik. Rokik is a type of baked good that we associate with menachas. So if a rokik that's posel touched a rokik that's kosher, and the kosher rokik absorbed from the rokik that's posel, v'chaticha v'chaticha, lo kol harikikin v'lo kol hachatichos asurin. We don't say that the entire kosher rokik or the entire kosher piece of meat becomes prohibited. Eino osur ela b'mokom shebola. The prohibition will apply only to the point of absorption, but not the entire piece. The Gemara asks, as far as the understanding of the Mishnah, my ko'omar, what does this Mishnah mean? After all, it said that if you cooked up a lower level type food in a pot that was previously used for a higher level kind of food, the pot is einon teunin rikon shtifa. What does that mean? After all, we're dealing with pots that were used for cooking up sacrificial meat, and as such, rikon shtifa is necessary. The Gemara answers, Chisuri Machasur V'Hochi Katani. The Mishnah was taught in an abbreviated fashion, but the true understanding is as follows. In our marking system, when the Gemara restates Mishnayos, we treat the restatement as if it were a Tanaic source with a frame. So the next few lines that you see in a frame is the more complete understanding of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah spoke about a lower level type item cooked in a pot that was just was previously used for a higher level food item. The Mishnah says, "Im yesh bohen benoy seitam," if the second food item has absorbed some of the taste of the previous higher level food item, harei hakalin echolim kachamurim, the lower level item will be eaten with the stringencies of the higher level item. Uteunin mrika shtifa, and these pots require the cleansing process of mrika shtifa. Upoislin bimago. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Upoislin bimago. Im hoyu hachamurim psulim, if the higher level sanctity item was pasul, v'akalin ksherim, and the lower item, the lower food item was acceptable. Nasu akalin kachamurim, the lower level items take on the characteristic of the higher level ones. Lifsoil es hanoigin bohen, if something subsequently touches these lower level sanctity items that had contact with the pasul, with the unfit higher level things, so these lower level food items will ruin that which comes into contact with them. Kedichtiv kol asher yiga b'vsora yikdosh. V'yomer lekamon lios kamo, that when something kosher of a lower level touches something unkosher, unacceptable of a higher level, the lower level thing becomes like the original item. Shimsula tifsal, that if it came into contact with something that was invalid, this second item now will render something else invalid that comes into contact with it. However, ein bohen benoy seitam, if the second item cooked in the pot doesn't contain any taste of the original higher level item that had been previously cooked up in the pot, then ein hakalin necholim kachamurim, the lower level food items are not eaten with the stringencies of the more restricted higher level items. The ein tunin riko shtifa, and there is no need for mriko and shtifa. The ein poislin bimago, and there will be, if the higher level item happened to be pasul, but the lower level item did not absorb any of its taste, so it won't pasul, it won't ruin something else that comes into contact with it. With regard to the mriko and shtifa, this source said that if the kachim kalim does not have any of the taste of the kache kachim in it, there is no need for mriko and shtifa. So the Gemara asks, nihi the kache kachim lo bo, kachim kalim niboi. Granted that there is not going to be any need for the mriko shtifa at the end of the zman achila of the chamurim. Let us say, the first food item that was cooked in the pot was koche kochim, that is a one-day eating period. Deha mu'otin ubatli, since with respect to the second food item, the kochim kalim that were cooked up afterwards, the koche kochim were a minority, and hence become botel. They lose their presence is considered non-existent. It's botel, it's voided. The pot then therefore can be viewed as a pot used for kochim kalim. Nevertheless, niboy mio mishum kalim lesov zman achilasim, there nevertheless still should be a requirement of mriko shtifa at the end of the kochim kalim time period, namely after 2 days. Why does this source give the feeling that if the kochim kalim that were cooked up second don't have any kochim taste in them, that there's no need at all for mriko shtifa? Before we go on, we notice a diamond on the side of our Gemara. We have a nosei mivneh to explain this. You see the diamond is featured. Shnei tshuvos l'sheila. We'll see two answers to the question. Lama l'fi mishnosenu im ein bo nosein tam shel kochei kochim ein sorich mriko shtifa. According to our Mishnah and the restatement of it, it sounds like that if there's no kotshe kotshim taste in the kotshim kalim that were cooked up subsequently, there's no need for mikus shtifa. Even if there's no need for kotshe mikus shtifa from the kotshe kotshim standpoint, which, as Rashi said, after one day, but nevertheless after 2 days, there should be a mikus shtifa requirement. After all, it was cooking, it was used, the pot was used to cook up kotshim kalim. Omar Abaye, back in the Gemara, Abaye answers, "My ein tunin dekomar." The source that used the expression "ein tunin," it doesn't need. What is that? Kotshe kotshim. It doesn't need after 1 day, which would be the kotshe kotshim time period. Avol kotshim kalim tunin. But after 2 days, it would require mikon shtifa. So that the ein tunim is not an across the boards exemption from mikon shtifa, but rather only with regard to the kotshe kotshim time period. Rava Omar, Rava has a different approach. He says, "Ha money, this source that seemed to indicate that as a result of the kotshim kalim there would be no need for mikos shtifa. Who is this? Rabbi Shimon. This source is authored by Rabbi Shimon, even though his name doesn't appear. It's taught according to Rabbi Shimon's opinion. The Omar kotshim kalim ein tunin mikos shtifa, as we learned earlier that." Kotshim Kalim does not necessitate Mariko Shtifa. Bishlama L'Rava, things will work out well according to Rava. Hainu Dikatoni, we can understand the fact that it taught Kotshim V'chulin, Oi Kotshe Kotshim V'Kotshim Kalim. The Rashi points out the fact that it taught these two examples is here to teach me that we have a Stam Mishnah, an unnamed Mishnah, that tells us Kotshim Kalim don't require Mikum Riku Shtifa. Therefore, in addition to the case of Kotshim V'chulin, it also taught the case of Kotshim Kalim, Kotshe Kotshim with Kotshim Kalim, and concludes by telling us that there's no need for Mikum Riku Shtifa. This reveals to us that we have a Stam Mishnah, an unnamed Mishnah, according to Rabbi Shimon, which, when we speak about a Stam Mishnah, we're saying that it has a significant legal weight to it. Elo la'abaye, according to Abaye, though, that says that you're going to need to have Mikon Shtifa anyway, Tarti Lomali. What do I need these two examples, the examples of Kotshim V'chulin and the example of Kotshe Kotshim V'Kotshim Kalim? Rashi explains a little further. According to Abaye, it would have been sufficient just to teach the principle of if there is no taste in the second item, bearing in mind, according to Abaye, there is a principle that's being taught in this source that if there is no perceived taste, so the original taste is botel, is void. So once you tell me, for example, the case of kotshim v'chulin, and you inform me that if there's no kotshim taste, there's no sacrificial taste in the mundane food item that was cooked up subsequently, then it doesn't have any of the stringencies of kotshim. So I have learned through that example alone the concept of botel b'miut. So once I teach the concept of botel b'miut, where the minority is becomes void in the face of the majority, I can understand as well that in a case of kotshim that were cooked up first, and then kotshim kalim, and I tell you that in the kotshim kalim there is no kotshe kotshim taste, I will thereby understand on my own that the dinim, the restrictions of the kotshe kotshim, will not apply. There, once again, then, why is it necessary, according to Abaye, to have the two examples? The Gemara answers, it is necessary. Tzrichi. And this is a long answer. You can see we've used a long answer marking, the tuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating that all of these lines form the answer. Why do I need both examples? And we've used a squiggle underline here, di tana kotshem v'chulin, to enable you to see that the next answer as well will be featured, the next example and its necessity will be featured a few lines later, where it says, V'i tona kotshe kotshim kalim, a few lines from here. So the Gemara explains it's Rishi. I need both cases. The E Tana Kodshim V'chulim, had the Mishnah taught that case, Havamina, I would have thought Chulin Hu the Mevatli Kodshim, that the mundane has the power of voiding the previously cooked sacrificial meat. Delav Minayu, it's not of the same category or the same identity. Namely, you have the mundane versus the holy. So if you have different categories, that which is different has the power of voiding the other item. Avol kodshe kodshim v'kodshim kalim emolo. But where both food items were of the same category, namely of a sacrificial nature, I wouldn't necessarily be able to conclude that the kodshim kalim, even though greater in quantity, I wouldn't necessarily know that it has the power of voiding the previously cooked kodshim. The e tana kodshe kodshim v'kodshim kalim, had the Mishnah taught only that example, where the example where the kodshim kalim, if there is no, quantity wise, it outnumbers the kodshe kodshim, and that the kodshim kalim is capable of being mevatel, avoiding the previously cooked kodshe kodshim, havamina, I would have thought kodshim hu the alimir to the kodshim. I would have thought that only that which is of a sacrificial nature has the power of voiding, has the strength. Alimi means the strength to have canceled the previous holy item. Avo chulin emolo. I would have thought by virtue of the fact that something is chulin, it's mundane, maybe that represents a certain weakness to it, so that even though it might be greater in quantity, it doesn't have the power of voiding the previously cooked kodshim, the sacrificial meat. Therefore, tzricha, it's necessary to teach that case as well, that chulin does have the koyach, the power, the strength to void the previously cooked sacrificial meat. As we said, of course, if there is no perceived taste of the previous item. Rokik shenoga berokik. The Mishnah spoke about a rokik, which is a type of baked good associated with menachos, that happened to be posel, unfit, that came into contact with a rokik that's kosher. Tonu rabbanan, kol asher yiga. The pasuk in Vayikra Perek Vav Pasuk Chav says, "Kol Asher Yiga Bivisara Yikdash." This is a pasuk that we've included on the inside margin. In addition to that, we also have a topic heading that we ought to read before we get into the Gemara. The Nosei at the bottom part of the outside margin, Mago Ublio Bachatichos Kachim. We'll talk about contact and absorption with regard to different pieces of sacrificial food. So this source, quoting the pasuk, says Kol Asher Yiga Yochol Afilu Shelo Bola. The pasuk that teaches that when there is contact, the second item becomes kodesh, becomes sanctified, if you will. Is that to be the case even if there is no absorption? Even if the second item that touched the first item did not absorb from it? Tamalomar Bivisara. The pasuk uses that expression to tell me Ad She Yivla Bivsar, until there is absorption. So we say that the second item won't be affected by its contact with the first item unless there is absorption of taste, of substance, absorption of juices, of fats into the second substance. Yochol noga b'miktzas chaticha ye kulo pasul. Let us say that the first item, which, if it were posel, let's say, had contact with only a partial contact with the second item, would the second item become entirely unfit? Tamalomar yiga, hanogea posel. Only the point of contact becomes posel. Ha ketzad, how are we to understand this practically? Chotech es mokoim shebola. You'll simply cut out the area of the second item that had absorbed from the first item, and that which remains will be acceptable. bivisara, velo begidin. The pasuk uses the word bivisara. From this we learn velo begidim, velo batsamos, velo bekanayim, velo betlafayim. This halacha applies to the meat, but not to contact, let us say, with sinews, bones, horns, or hooves. Yikdash, that was in the pasuk. Liyois kamoa, that the second item will take on the characteristics of the first item. The haketzad, im psulahi, if the first item, the first sacrificial food, happened to be unfit. Tifsal, the second item that came into contact with it will also become unfit, will be viewed as unfit. Vimksherohi, if the first item was acceptable, but let us say it was the first item was koche kochim, which carries with it a number of stringencies and restrictions, then toichal kechomur shaba, the second item that came into contact with it is to be eaten and treated with the stringencies of the first one. The Gemara now asks, why do we rule that the second item is that was kosher, on which there was actually a mitzvah? The second, if the second item we're talking about is as a piece of sacrificial meat, and it was acceptable, there is a mitzvah asay to eat it. Pasuk says, "Viichlu oisam." You're supposed to eat it. That's a mitzvah asay. So why don't we say as follows? Amai, why do you rule that the second kosher item will become pasul because it had contact with the first item that was pasul? V'nesi asay, v'litchi es lois asay. There's a rule in general in the Torah that when you have a mitzvah asay that runs into opposition or is contradicted by a mitzvah lo saseh, we say that the mitzvah saseh has the power to overrule the mitzvah lo saseh. The classic example of that is that there is a prohibition of wearing shatnez that's found in the Torah, garments made of a mixture of wool and linen. What is the din if one has tzitzis that are made of a combination of wool and linen? So since mitzvah tzitzit, mitzvah asay, and it's written in the Torah right after the prohibition of shatnez, we learn from that the mitzvah asay comes and pushes off the mitzvah lo asay. So why don't we say that the mitzvah asay of eating the kosher sacrificial meat pushes off the lo asay of not eating the pasul, the unfit? The Gemara answers, and you can see that we have a series of answers to deal with this. We have used a triangle marking off Rava, and a few lines later you see Rav Ashi. Why we don't say this principle of let the Aseh come and push off the Los Aseh. The principle of Aseh Doche Lois Aseh does not apply when you're dealing with the Beis HaMikdash. Desanya, and we'll now give an example of that. When we speak about Beis HaMikdash, we're talking about the realm of sacrifices. So this source features a pasuk dealing with the Korban Pesach, and it says, V'etzem loisish burubo, that one is not allowed to break the bones of a Korban Pesach. Everyone knows that bones, especially the larger bones, contain marrow, and the marrow is something that is people like to eat. It's edible. It's considered part of the meat, so to speak, of the korban. Rabbi Shimon Menashe Omer, echod etzem sheyesh boi moyach, the echod etzem she'ein boi moyach. The halacha of the prohibition of breaking the Korban Pesach bones applies across the boards, whether it's bones that have no marrow in them or bones that do have marrow. Well, you might ask, Amai, why do you say that even bones that contain marrow, there's a prohibition of breaking them? Nesi asei, velitchi eslos asei. Why not say that the positive command of eating the meat, including the marrow, it should cancel the restriction of etzem lo tishbruba, which is a negative command. So, and yet we don't say that. Therefore, one must conclude that the principle of asei d'chol aseh does not apply when it comes to matters relating to sacrifices and the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Ashi, Omar, Rav Ashi has a new approach to this question. He says, Yikdosh, the word Yikdosh that you find in our pasuk that we quoted, that we were dealing with the issue of absorptions, we quoted the pasuk from Vayikra Vav Pasuk Chav Ka Asher Yigav Ibsar Yikdosh. That word Yikdosh equals Aseihu. This word is written in the context of the item that was carried with it, greater stringencies. We said that anything that touches it, the second item will take on the restrictions of the first more stringent or more restricted food item. The word yikdosh is to be understood as an asei, as a positive command in and of itself. The ein asei, and therefore there's another principle that kicks in over here, and it states that a positive command, ein asei, doiche es lois asei ve'asei. The positive command of eating sacrificial meat does not have the power of pushing off a negative and positive, which you have over here of the negative, don't eat that which is possible, and the positive included in that of yikdosh. Therefore, says Rav Ashi, we're not going to suggest let an asei of ichlu osam push off the los asei of not eating possible, because the possible in fact carries with it not just the los asei, the negative command of don't eat that which is unfit, but there's a positive command as well that we refer to as yikdosh. Ashkechon chatos demekadeshes bebolua. We see from here that this idea of something, a second item, absorbing and thereby becoming, taking on the restrictions of the first item, we see this to be the case when something comes into contact with a chatos. After all, the posuk that we quoted was dealing with a korban chatos. Sha'ar kotshim minolon. Let's read this line again. Ashkechon chatos de mekadeshes bebolua. We see from here the chatos has the power to impose or convey its restrictions through absorption into a second item. Sha'ar kotshim minolon. How do we know this phenomenon to exist with regard to other sacrifices as well? Omar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Elazar. He quotes a pasuk, Zois hatera lo'ilo ulemincha velachatos ulaosham velamiluim ulezevach hashlomim. So in this pasuk, there's a list of many different korbanos. We've dashed underlined the word ulachatos, and we also have a little note that we've written in between the lines, and we've written there, Hatshuva l'she'ilas shar kotshim mofia b'omud abo. The question, the specific question regarding the absorption properties when it comes to other sacrifices. Let's say some meat came into contact with osham sacrificial meat or with ola sacrificial meat. How do you know that the second item that came into contact with the osham, if the second item absorbed from it, will take on the restrictions of the korban osham? So the answer to that question will mofia b'omen habo hahekish l'chatos. This there's an arrow that you see to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text with a tzadi ches amud aleph indicator. If you look at tzadi ches amud aleph, you'll notice the second line from the top. There's an arrow as well with a tzadi zayin amud beis indicator. At that point, if you skip momentarily to that line, the Gemara says quotes the word chatos from the pasuk and says, "Ma chatos mikadeshes bebalua, af kol mikadeshes bebalua." Since the pasuk compares other sacrifices to the chatos, we conclude that just like the chatos has this power of conveying its restrictions through absorption to other items, so too this phenomenon applies to other sacrifices as well, as they are all linked together in the pasuk that we just saw on Tzadi Zayim Abay's last of the narrow lines. Since we have noted that the answer to this question will be stated in a clear fashion at the top of Tzadi Chesem and Aleph, at this point in the Gemara, what takes place now, and you can see we have diamonds. These diamonds feature the different korbanos that are mentioned in the pasuk, and we said that the pasuk is here to compare one to the other. So the question that the Gemara will deal with is, what does each korban serve as a source of to teach to other korbanos? On the side of our Gemara, under our Nosei heading, the topic heading, we see Hamoker Shishar Kotshin Noisef Alchatos Mikatshin Bibolua. The purpose this Gemara is brought in is to show a source that other sacrifices also convey their sanctity through absorption. The Mivneh, the structural note, features the diamond, and the diamond highlights or surrounds Korbonus Shehukshu La'achirum La'alom De Mikol Echad. You'll see if you just scan ahead, you can see the word La'ola, later on Mincha, and the top of Tzadi Ches, you see these diamonds continue, Chatas, Osha, Miluim, Shlomim. Each one of the Korbanos is highlighted to find out what each Korban teaches me. What's the special characteristic of each Korban that it then serves as a basis to teach me to the others. We're going to soon see in our markings a double underline as well. These are shlovim, they're stages. Levarer, pirushma, oila, bekli, to try to understand what the Gemara means by an expression you'll see very shortly in the Gemara, ma, ola, bekli, and ma, londim, me, hahekesh, lemincha. This will appear a little later in the Gemara. What are we stages in trying to determine what we are to learn from the comparison of the other korbanos to a mincha? For the time being, suffice it to say that the use of the double underline in the next few lines points out stages in trying to figure out the topic at hand. So, not to lose sight of the forest for the trees, the reason this Gemara is brought in is to teach me how I know that there's a power of absorption with regard to the rest of the realm of sacrifices and not only by chatos. The Gemara answers, well, that's learned from this pasuk. How you see that point, that will be the topic of the Gemara at the top of Tzadi Ches Amud Aleph. In the meantime, the Gemara goes through each one of the korbanos and sees what are we to learn from them to the others. La oila, ki ola, just like the ola, ma ola tuna kli, just like the ola requires a vessel, af kol to una kli, so to all require a vessel. My kli, what do you mean by kli? Ilemo mizrak, if you're talking about the vessel used for receiving the blood. Before the sacrificial blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach, it's received in a vessel called a mizrak. So are we to understand that just like by the ola, there is the use of a mizrak, and by the ola, by Rashi points out, there is a source that indicates a mizrak was used. So that's an assumption that we are going to go with for the time being, that there's a given that an ola had a mizrak used for it, a mizrak being the vessel for receiving the blood. So are we learning from the ola that you use a mizrak and learn that too with respect to all the other sacrifices? Well, why should you say that the ola is the source of
the use of a mizrach. B'shalmei tzibur nami k'siv behu. With regard to public shlomim sacrifices, there is a pasuk that says, "Vayikach Moshe chatzi hadam, vayosem ba'agonos." Moshe Rabbeinu took the blood of the shlomim and put them in agonos. Agonos is the name of a vessel for receiving the blood. And since in this pasuk there is a reference to shlomim, it could be that maybe we're to learn the use of a mizrak from the shlomim. So what's unique to the Ola that we can say we learn from it with regard to vessels, we learn from the Ola to other sacrifices? Elo desakin. Just like the Ola is slaughtered with a knife, and not with, let us say, a sharp stone or a sharp reed, which, by the way, would be acceptable for general slaughtering, general personal chulin meat. There is no special need of using specifically a knife, a metal knife. One could use, as we mentioned, a sharpened stone. But when you're dealing with sacrifices, we're saying right now that we learned from an Ola that just like a knife is used as opposed to a sharpened stone, so too with regard to the slaughtering of all other sacrifices, a knife must be used. The Ola Gufa Minola, the Gemara asks, where do you know that the Ola itself necessitated the use of a knife? Answer, Dichtiv, it says in the Torah, in the case of the Akedas Yitzchok, the attempt of Avram Avinu to offer his son Yitzchok as a sacrifice. The Pasuk says, Vayishlach Avram es Yodoi, Vayikach es Hamacheles. The word Maacheles means knife. It says that Avram reached out and took a knife. The Hosam Oilo Hu, and that was an example of an Ola. How do you see that? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vayaleu Leoilo Tachas Beno. In the Akedas Yitzchok story, we know that he never actually sacrificed his son, but he did sacrifice a ram instead. And the Pasuk says that he offered the animal as an Ola instead of his son. So we see that Avram Avinu was using a knife for an Ola. With our markings, what we've done, in addition to everything else, we've dashed underline Hamacheles, which is the knife, and the Ola, which is the topic that we're dealing with, proving that an Ola had a knife. So once we've established from the Akedas Yitzchok story that an Ola was slaughtered with a knife, when I see Ola in the Pasuk, that was the Hekesh from one to all the other Korbanos, we can learn from the Ola, which had a knife, to all other sacrifices that need to be slaughtered, they are to be done with a knife and not with a sharpened stone, for example. Mincha. What are we to learn from Mincha? In the Pasuk, that in Vayikra Zion, that mentions Zoy Sater Lolo Mincha, what do we learn from Mincha to all the other sacrifices? So we see, Ma Mincha Eino Necheles Elo Lezichrei Kehuna. Just like the mincha is eaten only by male kohanim, af kol einom necholim elo lezichrei kuna. So to all are eaten only by the male kohanim. My he. What exactly is learned from the hekesh to mincha? Which korbanos are learned from the hekesh to mincha? Namely, the restriction to male kohanim. I chatos v'osham. If you're suggesting that I'm going to learn the chatos and osham sacrificial meat is restricted to male kohanim, and I'm going to learn that point from the fact that the chatos and osham are compared to the mincha in this pasuk, I don't need the comparison to mincha for that point. Behedyo k'siv behu. It says explicitly, by those sacrifices, called Zochah B'Kohanim Yochlenu, all male Kohanim eat them, the Chatos and Osham. V'i Zivchei Shalmei Tzibor, and if you're suggesting that I'm going to learn that only male Kohanim eat the public Shlomim offerings, and I'm learning that from the Mincha, I don't really learn that point from the Mincha. May Ribuya Dekra Asi, Bekodesh HaKodeshim Tochlenu Kol Zochor Yochal Oisoi. That's the pasuk. Mi made al shalmeit zibor she'enom ne'cholam ela zirchei kahuna. From that pasuk of Bakidesh HaKadoshim, we are learning this point, and not from the comparison of the shlomim to the mincha. The Gemara responds and says, "Tanoi hi." The issue of what is the source for the restriction to male kohanim is itself a Tanaic controversy. Ika denafka le mehacha, the ika denafka le mehacha. There are those that learn that the shalmei tzibur are restricted to male kohanim from the hekesh to mincha, and there are those that learn it from the pasuk of Bakidesh HaKadoshim Tochlenu. Chatos, what are we learning from the comparison of other korbanos to the chatos? Ma chatos mikadeshes bibolua, just like the chatos has the power of conveying its sanctity and restrictions, let us say, through absorption, af kol mikadeshes bibolua, so too all other sacrifices have that power. Osham, what do we learn from the comparison to Osham? Ma Osham ein shvir v'shilya kodesh bo, just like the korban Osham, the embryo and the placenta that are in it are not sanctified. Af kol ein shvir v'shilya kodesh bo, so too all other sacrifices that are pregnant, the shvir, the embryo, and the shilya, the placenta, don't have any sacrificial sanctity. We have to point out that a korban osham is a male korban. So you'll ask, well, it's a male korban. Of course it doesn't have an embryo in it. So the Gemara points out, Kosovar vlodos kochim v'hav yosan hein kedoshim. The offspring of kochim, the newborn from Kochim, gain sanctity only upon their actual birth. Hence, while the animal is pregnant with them, you don't have any obligations of treating the vlad, the embryo, with sacrificial responsibility. What we mean by that, for example, is that in a standard korban, the innards, the chelev, the forbidden fats of the standard korban is offered on the altar. In the case of a pregnant korban, you don't have to be makriv the chalovim of the vlad, of the embryo. And this point of the fact that the osham was a male korban is pointed out here. V'donin efsher mishi efsher. I'm able to learn efsher, animals that have the possibility of becoming pregnant, female sacrifices. I am able to learn them mishi efsher from the impossible, from the male sacrifice that can't become pregnant. But nevertheless, we, as a result of this point of Donin, Efsher, Mishi Efsher, gives me the right to say that I'm going to learn from the Osham, Halachas regarding embryos, to all the other sacrifices when they do become pregnant. With that, we conclude our Shiur for today.